This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Today, in global bond markets, there is over $15 trillion of negative-yielding debt in issuance, including 37% of all euro investment-grade credit. Nearly a decade of loose monetary policy has left developed market yields languishing at all-time lows, and investors everywhere are scrabbling around for more income. Enter emerging market debt, a $12 trillion asset class and growing. Major issuers, such as China, are being included in global bond indices. But is there a misconception about this asset class? And what are the opportunities for institutional mandates, including some with very specific cash flow requirements, in what has been considered a niche area of fixed income so far? Joining me today to interrogate this thorny issue are John Gray, emerging market credit analyst.
Hi there.
Karen Ng from our buy and maintain team.
Hello.
And Toby Orpin from the solutions distribution team.
Hi.
I'm going to start with a broader question. John, can you just give me a flavour of what the landscape looks like today? How big is this market?
So emerging markets, as you mentioned, so it's about $12 trillion asset class now. And to put a comparison in there, USTs, US Treasuries are 15.6 trillion. So it's a really big, diverse and mature asset class now. Put that into context, for example, US high yield, which everyone seems very comfortable with and knows a lot about. Generally, when we speak to investors, they know a lot about it, is 1.7 trillion. So a 12 trillion asset class, it really dwarfs that. And that's bringing in local and hard currency, but you can drill down in there. I think also emerging markets, the term really conjures up a lot of misconceptions for investors. And a lot of the time I spend is actually myth-busting because what I hear back is that emerging markets is a niche asset class. Now, 12 trillion cannot be classified as a niche asset class. It's very large and diversified. We're dealing with sovereigns, corporates, quasi-sovereigns as well. And we're dealing with high yield and IG, and the biggest indices out there have, say, around 50% IG, 50% high yield. And JP Morgan's corporate index, which is closely followed, is actually an IG index. And the emerging market sovereign index that they have is one notch below IG. So you can see that there's a lot of diversification in there.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the emerging markets themselves and the macro drivers behind the markets and how the dynamics have changed there?
Yeah, so emerging markets in about 1980 was about 20% of world GDP, and now we're up to around 40% of world's GDP. And on a PPP basis, we're actually above 50% of the world's GDP now. So clearly a huge part of or dominating or will dominate global growth. And interestingly, if you look at the top 10, PwC completed a very interesting report setting out the world's top 10 economies. And currently, five out of the top 10 are emerging markets. By 2030, they're predicting that six out of the top 10 will be emerging markets. And then now, at 2050, they're looking for six out of the top seven will be emerging markets. So they will dominate the world's top 10 economies going out, and it continues to be a key part of a key growth driver for the world economy.
So something that's coming across is how differently emerging markets have behaved from developed markets over the past two decades. But what about within the asset class itself? Karen, do all emerging markets behave in the same way?
So there are definitely similarities between EM and DM, especially in the investment grade segment. And emerging markets in general has been perceived by investors as a riskier asset class compared to other parts of the fixed income market. But when we actually look at the historical numbers, for example, default rates, which is more relevant for long-term investors like pension schemes and arts buy and maintain, EM default rates are very comparable to that in the DM world. So for example, the EMIG default rate is below 0.5%. And that is in line with where you expect in the DM world. So overall, I wouldn't be concerned about default risk for emerging market investment grade.
John, would you say there's a case of mislabeling when we talk about emerging market debt now? could you say that emerging market asset classes have already emerged to some extent?
Well, clearly, as we discussed earlier, when you do think emerging markets, you some terms used as the tequila crisis, the Russia crisis, the Asia crisis, and the three common words in there is crisis. So that conjures up negative connotations for the asset class. But you have to understand that emerging markets is an incredibly diverse asset class, which encompasses investment grade, which has very low default rates, and high yield, which has higher default rates, of course. But when we're dealing with the cash flow matching portion of clients' portfolios, we're looking at IG debt, hard currency IG debt, which shows very low default rates and is very high quality, especially in terms of rating.
So we're thinking about sort of $2 trillion US dollars worth of debt there. Toby, can you just outline the problems that these schemes have typically faced when trying to implement CDI or cash flow driven investing strategies? I know there are ratings constraints in many mandate guidelines, which has created a bit of a conundrum for trustees.
Yeah, lots of pension schemes are slowly, well, actually quite quickly, turning cash flow negative, and this is becoming more of a challenge for pension scheme trustees to try and work out a strategy to match these cash flows. CDI, or cash flow driven investment, is a key tool to help pension schemes manage the outflow of assets over time. But traditionally, clients have only really looked at developed market bonds, and currently you're just not getting much yield or much return from these bonds. So to lock into a CDI strategy just using developed market really can sort of impair the chance of that pension scheme becoming fully funded over sort of a medium term. So by introducing EM, actually you can get a higher yield, which really can just enable cash flow matching more quickly for pension schemes to get where they need to faster.
And that's particularly at the front end?
Yeah, especially at the front end. I think that's a fair point. A lot of the bonds in the emerging market universe are typically a bit shorter than the developed market universe, but the developed market bonds, especially at the short end, so the shorter liabilities, just don't offer that much yield. So the emerging market can really step up here at the short end for clients targeting short-dated cash flows.
Given what we've heard today about emerging markets converging on developed markets in inflation and economic indicators, but also in credit ratings, could it be that big institutional investors are perhaps missing an opportunity due to the perception that EMD is too risky?
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. There does still seem to be a stigma around emerging market investing. Although, interestingly enough, lots of pension schemes are already invested via maybe their DGF allocation or equity allocation without really realising it. But to make a standalone allocation for cash flow, I think definitely will take some comfort to make sure you understand the fundamentals. But we really believe this is absolutely achievable.
Karen, when adding EMD to a CDI portfolio, do you get any other benefits apart from increased yield?
Yes, definitely. So as John mentioned earlier, EM hard currency investment grade markets is about $2 trillion in size. This significantly expands the investable universe for our sterling-based investor. So the current sterling market is just under $1 trillion in size. So effectively, this has tripled the investable universe for these type of investors. And on top of the spread pickup, allocating to EMD also improves diversification, which means we are adding new exposures to different sectors like the sovereigns and quasi-entities versus a traditional cash flow matching portfolio, which primarily invests into hard currency DM credits. And most of these quasi-entities are of strategic importance to their country, and hence they could be partially or fully backed by their government. And beyond this, there'll be also new exposure to countries that you wouldn't have in the DM world.
And Karen raises a great point. So we're thinking about sovereigns, quasi-sovereigns and corporates. Now, the definition that JP Morgan uses for a quasi-sovereign is, say, it has to be 100% owned by the sovereign, whereas Gazprom, for example, is incredibly important for Russia, but it's less than 100% owned, so it's actually classified as a corporate within the indices. So we can, yes, there's sovs and quasis, but then we can also look at corporates, investment-grade corporates, so that's financials and non-financials, again, significantly expanding the base and offering further diversification.
Yeah, so the key benefit from diversification is less is that we're getting less correlated returns. And EM is such a big universe that you'll find credits that are driven by different factors in different parts of the world. And this kind of the first layer of diversification benefit that you can get. And if we go to a second level, I think it's also worth noting that the investor base of EM is getting more domestically biased, especially in Asia. So to us, this is a great positive because these investors provide strong tentacles to the market and they form a large, sticky investor base.
I see. So I'm hearing a lot of advantages in terms of diversification and also giving investors opportunities to expand their investable universe, but also expand into a space which maybe doesn't exist so clearly in developed markets of the quasi, so of a credit that is partially backed by the government, which provides some security, but also keeps that great yield boost. So you've convinced me about EMD for CDI investors. But it sounds like there's a huge range of opportunities and options for implementing this approach. John, can you talk to me a little bit about our approach here at LGIM and why we use it?
We really believe that the active approach is the best approach for the cash flow matching, the EM sleeve of the cash flow matching portfolio. The reason for that is that emerging markets are a more nuanced market. We've built an incredibly strong team at Legal & General. The chap who runs the team has been investing in emerging markets for 25 years and has built a very strong team underneath him. And with that, the guys have been around the block a few times and see the banana skins that can be left there. So I think it is important to be able to actively manage the portfolio to mitigate the risks that can pop up in emerging markets. It's not to say that there'll be a fully active approach where you're seeing a huge turnover of the portfolio, but I think it is wise to have emerging market experts looking after the portfolio so that they can mitigate risks.
Yeah, and if I can chip in on that, when we're constructing cash flow matching portfolios, it really is about delivering that cash flow to pay the liabilities. It's about the certainty of receiving that cash flow. So across both developed markets and emerging markets, having an active view, having the credit researchers and fund managers looking all over the corporate bonds that you're invested in really is critical to the success of this strategy.
Absolutely. Karen, from a portfolio implementation perspective, how do you construct the portfolios?
Yeah, so I think Toby already mentioned one of the common problems that pension schemes are having is the shortfall in cash flow in the front end of their liabilities. So we're often being asked by clients to come up with a solution to solve this and at the same time to maintain the yield and the credit quality of the portfolio. So we believe EM short-dated investment-grade bonds would be a good fit into these type of portfolios. And what it means in terms of allocation, a client could expect to see EM debt with shorter maturities coupled with longer-dated DM credits. And the credit quality of the overall portfolio will remain investment-grade rated. As for sterling-based investor, all foreign exposures are currency hedged, and interest rates exposure is also hedged back to sterling rates. And in LGIM, we have a proprietary portfolio construction engine which optimizes portfolios considering clients' cash flow requirements. So this tool allows us to tailor solutions subject to very specific constraints like sector or rating limits. In addition, we're also able to model hedges when we invest into foreign markets. And another thing to highlight here is that in our model calculation, we also make adjustments for default assumptions for prudence purposes.
So that allows you to be really bespoke when you're addressing clients' concerns.
Yeah, exactly. So one example that we have done recently is we have been asked by a client to exactly solve this problem. So we ran a solution which includes an allocation to emerging market debt. So in this portfolio, we decided to allocate around 15% into EM debt, and we maintained this IG portfolio to single A rated, and the spread pickup is about 40 to 50 basis points as a gross level.
Thanks very much, everyone, for a fascinating discussion. Just as a final question to wrap this up, I want to ask where you all see opportunities in this space. I'm going to kick this over to John to start.
I think some of the good work that Karen's done on the yield pickup that we can achieve with in adding in an emerging markets sleeve into a cash flow matching portfolio is really interesting. If you just very simply look at, say, an A-rated bond in, which is classed under emerging markets, and you look at A-rated bond in the developed markets, you can see anything from a 30 to 50 basis points pickup there. And that's not to say that over time that more people will be looking at this this opportunity and these spread differentials can be squeezed away. But right now there is that pickup on offer, and for me it's a glaring opportunity for people to take advantage of.
And Karen?
Yeah, so from a solution angle, we believe EMD is a very attractive asset class for all the reasons that John and all of us has discussed. And more importantly, I think it helps complete our cash flow matching puzzle.
Really interesting. And finally, Toby, just a line on client demand, please.
Yeah, I mean, clearly cash flow driven investment isn't going away. Pension schemes are getting more cash flow negative at an increasingly alarming rate. So we believe by thinking outside the box, this definitely could give your scheme an edge. For example, including an allocation to EMD could really help clients to start thinking about the problem sooner.
So, an asset class which offers a higher yield and diversification for a similar risk profile. John, Toby and Karen, thank you for coming to talk to us about such an interesting opportunity.
Not a problem. Thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. For more information, you can read our article, which we've linked in our show notes.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.